no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk, I am your host, Drew Mindell. We welcome everyone to the program. So nice to see so many of you bright and early joining us on this Saturday, the fifth day of the month of June. Our apologies for starting a couple of minutes late. Ezzy and I were having a deep, intense conversation about our respective children's pediatricians. And, you know, we can keep that going, but I have a hunch there's not very many people who are interested in knowing who our kids go to for their annual checkups. Dave, I mean, you can be the deciding vote here.
I'm not remotely interested, so I would rather we start the show.
Okay. You know, I'm just saying, you know, maybe we could give some hints. Maybe we could get some deep insights. No, nothing, nothing. No, Dave's got no interest in that at all.
To be honest with you, it may be more interesting than a hockey game we all watched last night, but
it's not too far off, I got to say. At least there'd be emotion. You know, at least when our kids go to the doctor, usually there's some emotion involved. Maybe there's some tears. Maybe there's some high fives. Maybe there's some hugging afterwards, but there certainly wasn't any emotion in last night's Jets-Canadians game, allegedly a playoff game. But boy, oh boy, that was not an entertaining contest last night. We'll talk about that this morning. We'll talk about the Scheifele suspension. We'll talk about games 3 and 4 coming tomorrow and Monday night as well. Undoubtedly, a busy Saturday morning in store for us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. While it's so nice to see so many of you, what we ask from you is two things. One, keep the conversation in the chat nice and clean. You can disagree, but do so respectfully. That's what we request. And two, while you're here, smash the like button. Give us a thumbs up. That's what we want from you. That's all we ask of you while we provide you with this hockey content each and every Saturday morning and after each and every Winnipeg Jets hockey game. Gentlemen, good to see you both. It has been a whopping 10 and a half hours since we last got together, but it is still nice to see your shining, smiling faces.
Yeah, what's up, boys? And it's great to see everybody back. As you mentioned, we went on off air, and I was going to say, we weren't able to watch the majority of the Vegas Colorado game because we were obviously doing the post game show. But you turn that game on. I was texting Dave that third period, and I'm not sure if you watched any of it, Drew. But that third period was about as good as it gets in terms of hockey. And I couldn't help but think, guys, as I was watching that third period, right? And Colorado goes up 2-1 on the Mikko Rantanen goal. And 17 games with straight games with a point is absurd. And I don't think enough people in the hockey world are talking about that because he's one game away from tying Wayne Gretzky. So that's pretty good company there. So just wanted to get that in there. Rantanen has been unbelievable for Colorado. But you're watching that game, Dave, and you're thinking, this should be the conference final. This should not be a second-round game. It kind of reminds you guys going back to when Pittsburgh and Washington would play in the second round, right? Because you
or
knew
the
one,
Jets,
if one
the
of those
Jets
teams.
And the Predators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the Jets and the Predator series was equally as entertaining. You know, the top two teams in the league, number one versus number two.
Either today, apparently, the first second period weren't great. That third period, in contrast, yesterday's Jets Canadians game was just dark.
Ezzy's having some technical difficulties, so we'll get Ezzy to fix that up while Dave and I will carry the show on our backs like we do each and every Saturday. Anyways, right there, Dave M, I'm sure Ezzy couldn't hear that comment, so hopefully he won't get too mad at me. But it really is the contrast, and we're going to talk about the Jets and the Habs because that's obviously everyone's focus. But last night's hockey game was just duller than dishwater. It was just it wasn't commensurate with the hockey that's being played on the three other playoff series at this point in the season. And that's why everyone says that, whoever wins this Jets-Habs series is just going to be fodder for whoever wins the Avalanche-Golden Knights series. And I have no disagreement with that comment. The Jets didn't get any offense last night. They made it very easy on the Montreal Canadiens to sit on that one goal lead. The Habs take that 1-0 lead on the Tyler Toffoli shorthanded goal after just an odd sequence. by Kyle Connor, who just really doesn't do anything to contribute or prevent the scoring chance. He back checks hard, which is fine, but it was an ineffectual back check at best. And, you know, clearly, I think
you just took the wrong guy, Drew.
Well, yeah, that
just stayed with Lehkonen, and I didn't. Yeah, and I just wanted to say I didn't understand Paul Maurice's, like, obviously Maurice is not going to throw Connor under the bus, but, you know, what he said was something along the lines of Connor didn't think he could keep up with Lehkonen. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Connor's a pretty good skater. He's one of the best skaters on the Jets. Lehkonen's pretty speedy as well. But if you watch the replay, like, Connor's right there. And what ended up happening, first off, if Tyler Toffoli didn't score, Lehkonen would have been wide open. It was just poor defensive coverage.
Yeah, which really shouldn't be that much of a surprise, Dave, because Kyle Connor is not known for his defensive abilities, certainly at all. He's known as a goal scorer. And it was a bad night for Kyle Connor, I would say, because for a team like the Jets, who are desperate for offense, they are desperate to get the win so they don't go down 2-0. They're without Mark Scheifele. You know, Kyle Connor needed to step up last night, and he was noticeable for all the wrong reasons. Starting there, doesn't do anything on the offensive side of things whatsoever. It was just a bad night for the highest paid Winnipeg Jets forwards because they weren't able to elevate their game when the Jets needed to elevate it the most.
Yeah. Just to quickly mention that Colorado game, because Ezzy's right. Like, we turned that on, and look, there's nothing we can do about it right now, but because based on the stats of what is going on in our province, but I have to tell you, like, what a different environment. Even just forget the hockey. Hockey was incredible, but the environment with the Phil building and stuff like that. So, you know, it really does seem like a tale of two cities, and the hockey itself, though, was like night and day. Like, it really was night and day. I mean, I called that probably one of the most boring playoff games I've ever seen in my entire life. And it obviously resonated because about 500 people agreed with me on Twitter. Not saying that necessarily proves that I'm right, but
might mean you're in bad company.
Yeah, well, I would suspect not. But the point is that, and then I flipped on that, after Ezzy and I wrapped up our post game show, and I watched the Colorado and Vegas, and I thought to myself, like, wow, like, there's more action in that 1 minute, that one period, that third period, which we watched, was better than any period we watched, you know, in the playoffs in the North Division, I would suspect. So, getting to the game itself, like I said, you needed guys to step up. We know in the bubble in Edmonton last year in Calgary, you lose Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Mason Appleton, and you have to insert three new guys into the lineup for game two. And you scratched and clawed your way to a 3-2 win in the game two. And obviously they ultimately lost the series because it's hard to sustain those types of losses. But, you know, we just didn't see, and you, I guess Montreal played the style that they play, which is a fairly boring, smothering style of hockey. So that's fine. That they'll be able to do that, and they have Carey Price in net. Not, as we discussed last night on the postgame show, that he was particularly tested by the Winnipeg Jets. I think the number on Natural Stat Trick said they had 5 or 6 high danger chances to the Habs, 11 or 12.
They had 2 after 40 minutes, the Jets did.
Yeah, I mean, the third period is when the Jets put on a little bit of a push, of course, because you're trying to tie the game. They put Neil Pionk with Josh Morrissey. They were trying, you know, obviously they bumped Matthew Perreault down onto the third line. But, you know, guys, I like I said, that was kind of a game that you anticipated the Jets were going to be able to make that characteristic push. You know, okay, you're not in the game, you're not dominating the game, but you have enough firepower to get you back into the game. And that's what we've seen with this team traditionally. We even saw it in the Edmonton series where they were able to. And I think I saw the stat that so far they've trailed in this series to Montreal, you know, for 75 minutes of the first two games or something like that. And then the other 25, it was tied. So it hasn't been a banner series for the Jets, but there wasn't one in which they were.
Hang on. I got to stop you. That equals 100. They played 120 minutes.
I
love
there
you,
was,
but
now Drew, there was 20 minutes that was actually lost where nobody was playing. Yeah, why Dave didn't include
that. I'm just telling you what I,
I know what your point is. Your point is that the Habs have controlled the series on the scoreboard. The Jets have not led for a second of the 120 minutes so far. The best they've done is had it tied for, you know, maybe a quarter, if that, of the 120 minutes that have been played.
So look, you have to figure things out. I mean, if the blueprint that you created against the Oilers isn't being successful against the Habs, then what you need to do is change your blueprint and you have to evolve. And that's kind of what we've talked about is the key for this Jets team is when you realize something isn't working, you can say, oh, well, we're in the game. But like, again, we talked about it, you know, the shots that they got on Carey Price, he saw them. There was nobody in front of the net, nobody creating any chaos. It's interesting because chaos was a word that was thrown out a lot. Like, we have to create chaos. Sure. But they didn't. And so you're watching that game and you're thinking to yourself, like, why is Adam Lowry not parked in front, using his body to, you know, clear out the defenders and create and, you know, take away Carey Price's eyes? You know, the one chance I'm just thinking was it Neil Pionk who took the shot and Blake Wheeler was just a little, like about a half a second.
On the power play.
Yeah, on the power play.
On the third period power play. The only shot the Jets had on that third period power play.
Which was, the power play was atrocious. So, I mean, probably shouldn't be even referencing it. But at the end of the day, you need to take away Carey Price is too good a goaltender for shots from, you know, 15 or even 100 feet to beat him, you know, clean shots. So you're going to have to take away his eyes. You're going to have to score a dirty goal. Get someone in front. You know, and they had a few opportunities where there was a little bit of chaos, but not enough to actually create what they needed, that sustained element to get them in this game.
Look, it's not like we're telling the Jets or suggesting anything that they themselves don't know, Ezzy. You know, they know that they need to make it difficult. They need to make it harder on Carey Price. But, you know, the truth is, with Montreal's defense and the size that they are and how they defend the front of the net very well, it's difficult to go into those areas. It's not an easy place to go. The Jets needed more will to go there, to get in front of Carey Price, to influence his eyes, as the saying goes. They weren't able to do it last night. That's not to say that, you know, tomorrow night they won't be able to do it, because I think they know, you know, you're down 2-0. There is no tomorrow if you're down 3-0. There's no other opportunity. The Jets have to play their best game of the playoffs tomorrow night. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. They need to make this a series again. And then on the second half of a back-to-back, well, anything can happen, because that's going to be a lot of hockey for both teams. And then you compound that with the hockey that Montreal already played in their 7-game series against Toronto.
I think it's 11 games in 19 days or something like that.
Something like that. You would think it's eventually going to catch up to them. But that's why game three is clearly the tipping point.
It's the whole series.
It's the whole series. It's the whole rest of the season for the Jets. If you don't have your best effort of the series, probably of the season, to be honest, if you don't have your best game, you know, that you've played in a long time in game three, then you might as well not have it in game four, because it's not going to matter. The Jets need to know that. And I'm sure they do. I'm not telling them anything that's earth shattering or that anyone in the chat also doesn't know. It's just a matter of having.
Drew Pomerantz is online. He says that's really insightful, and he appreciates it. Now he knows what to do against the Habs in game three.
Feel free to take that, Paul. You don't even have to give me credit for it. That you can use that entirely on your own. But the Jets just need to do it. It's a matter of will. You know how to do it. It's just a matter of being able to execute it, being able to fight through the big bodies of Ben Chiarot and Shea Weber and Joel Edmondson and the trees that the Montreal Canadiens have in front of their net playing defense. The Jets just have to find a way to do it, Ezzy.
Yeah, Jeff Petrie too. Like, he's such an underrated defenseman. I agree with you 100%, Drew. I mean, they have to find ways to get to Carey Price to score goals. Look at, like, Carey Price and the Habs are doing to the Jets what they did in those last two games versus the Leafs, right? They scored, what was it, 3 goals? They scored in the last two games against the Canadiens. The Leafs, of course, I mean, and you know, so you're not going to score 4 or 5 goals a night against the Habs. Like, it's just it's most likely not going to happen. You might maybe, you know, do that in one game, but that's not the type of series this has been. It's going to be, you know, a 2-1, 1-0 type of series, and things might change, but I don't think there's anything that would indicate it's going to change. So I agree with Dave, and you know, back to those power plays, like, you remember, guys, on the first power play, like, Adam Lowry was out there and he had a chance. He didn't get a very good shot off. But, like, to me, that's, you know, something that you got to have not only on the power play, but even strength. Like, guys like Adam Lowry, Andrew Kopp, you know, Mason Appleton. You saw, you know, Matty Perreault with some good net drive. Like, he was trying to get to the net. He's obviously a smaller player, so it's not as easy for him as it is for guys like Lowry and Appleton and Kopp. But That's what you're going to have to see. And, you know, on the postgame show, we talked about like the lack of high danger chances. Like you remember early in the third period, I want to say it was like 30 seconds, a minute in when Connor fed Dubois with that little pass in tight and Dubois didn't get a very good shot off. I think it actually like went right in the middle of Price. He just, you know, he was in right perfect in the position. But those are the types of, I kept saying this last night, like the small area plays, like you're going to have to find ways to create offense, not off the rush. Montreal does not give up a lot off the rush. And like how many odd man rushes have the Jets had this series? I don't think they've had one. I really don't think they've had like 1-2-on-1 and Montreal just doesn't give you a lot. So you're going to have to find different ways.
The only one would have been Adam Lowry's shorthanded goal. I mean, in game one, than that,
of course. Yeah.
You know, and that's not anything scheme wise the Jets have done. That was a fortuitous bounce and Lowry made a great play, which you don't have to apologize for that. But that's, you know, the reality of the situation. The Jets have been way too much for the first two games, Dave, on the perimeter. Everything's been to the outside. They need to, as we, you know, the dirty areas, the cliche notwithstanding, they need to shoot a puck that bounces off a leg and goes in. Because the Harlem Globetrotters style goals just aren't there in the playoffs. They're not there except for the rarest of situations, or if you're the entire Colorado Avalanche team, I suppose. But you know, for the most part, it needs to be a shot when you have an opportunity to shoot. You know, when you look like you're in a decent position to shoot, you fire that puck, you fire it hard, and if you score on it, great. But also, it might create a rebound. It might create chaos in front of the net. There's been no chaos from the Jets' perspective, Dave, and that's what they need to focus on. You know, obviously, you know, they head out to Montreal later today. That's what you need to create for games 3 and 4, Sunday and Monday.
You know what? I mean, Drew, just to look at that a little further, if you watch going back to that Vegas game, where did Jonathan Marchessault shoot that shot from that beat Grubauer? Shot it from basically behind the Colorado net after a rush attempt.
Such a clever play, Dave.
And yeah, so he wasn't trying for, you know, a highlight reel goal. He figured, okay, I'm just going to fire it on net and hope something happens. Ties the game. And then when, I think it was like 45 seconds later, the tip by Pacioretty, you know, beats Grubauer and they take a 3-2 lead and they end up holding on. So you're right. I mean, it doesn't have to be pretty. It has to, we keep going back to this.
It is XXL, Chad. That's right. $2.20 right here.
The Habs.
Ezzy, since when can you afford $2.20?
I've been saving up. I actually found some change in my couch.
So the point is that the Jets need to do that, Drew. I mean, again, it's getting away from this idea of the perfect goal. It's changing that, like I said, you have to evolve. If what you're doing against the Montreal Canadiens isn't working, if they're smothering, you know, your breakout attempts. I mean, look, guys, the passing was atrocious yesterday. Everything was behind the guy. Like there was no, you killed your own momentum with those passes yesterday. I can't tell you how many times I watched and counted. And I thought, how are you supposed to gain any speed through the neutral zone or your own zone if the pass is behind you? So the team looked discombobulated. And you can't say that moving, like Paul Stastny hasn't played and you're moving Mark Scheifele. Obviously that's a major piece. I don't minimize the loss of your top center, and suggest that's not a big deal for the team because it is. But at the same time, majority of these guys have all played together. And the passing just wasn't crisp. Like I said, I don't think the Jets are out of it. Tomorrow's game will absolutely determine the series. There's no question. And that's not a insight that is something that 100% of the people who are in the chat or general hockey fans or anyone else doesn't understand how important tomorrow's game is. But like I said, the Jets team that we thought we saw against the Oilers doesn't seem to be the team that we're seeing against the Montreal Canadiens. And again, changing your style based on your opponent isn't a bad thing. And the Jets have had more than enough time to have adjusted. I don't care. Look, I don't care if you're saying, oh, well, they were ready for Toronto. Well, they had more than enough time and they're a professional hockey team that has, you know, a lot of employees to watch game film on both teams. So they should have been prepared for what Montreal was going to bring. Of course, they weren't ready. They weren't knowing that they were going to lose Mark Scheifele for 4 games. But like I said, you go back to the bubble and know that was the whole point we talked about throughout the course of the season, right? Was this idea of guys being interchangeable based on your experience in the bubble, knowing that you could lose a critical piece of your team and having to be able to, or three, and being able to adjust. And like I said, you can't absorb a loss of a Mark Scheifele, a top center, and pretend like it's not a big deal, because it's huge. It's massive for this Jets team. But it's your reality. And if you can't adjust to reality, then you're going to be on the outside looking in, lamenting that, you know, your season's over.
Saturday boys, morning, you're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. I see him in the chat, he being Frank Zappia, so it's very appropriate that this portion of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
So I saw a few Zappia Group signs. I was in the West End yesterday taking my daughter to her doctor's appointment at the Manitoba Clinic near HSE. So I saw at least three Zappia Group signs on the way there. And I know that Frank and Mauro are very busy right now, so I wanted to get that in there. But, you know, I just wanted to start off, guys, with saying, like, you have to attack with speed. And I know that's become a cliche in the modern game. But to Dave's point, like, you know, when you hear, you know, the neutral zone and why it's important to gain speed through the neutral zone, it's because if you come through slow and your passes aren't crisp, most likely your zone entries aren't going to be good, right? Like, it's all related. Speed through the neutral zone, zone entries. If you're forced to dump the puck in, you got to go get the puck. Why is a forecheck important? Because if you don't establish a forecheck, the other team's defensemen are going to have, and forwards are going to have way too much time breaking out the other way, right? So it's about pressure and speed. And that's what the Jets have to get back to. And yes, Scheifele is a guy that obviously, you know, likes to hang on to the puck. He's a fast player. But you've got other fast players, guys, like Nick Ehlers is a fast player. Kyle Connor is a fast player. Pierre-Luc Dubois is a fast player. Andrew Kopp, I don't think, gets enough credit for his speed. Even a guy like Adam Lowry doesn't necessarily look like he's fast. But let me tell you, from a guy who wasn't a very fast skater on the Varsity View A1 Falcons, he's a fast skater. So, like, you know, I just don't buy this kind of narrative that, you know, Montreal is completely shutting the Jets down. I just don't think the Jets are playing anywhere close to the level they were playing at in the Edmonton series. And they have to get there. You're 100% right, Drew. You mentioned it. Like, this team has another gear to get to.
Well, to Dave's point, what he said earlier, when you don't generate a good first pass out of your zone, and I'm not talking about because of Montreal's forecheck or something like that, when you just don't generate, you know, it's not crisp leaving your own zone, or you have to stall in the neutral zone, there's not going to be any speed. It starts in your own zone with generating speed, and the Jets have just failed in terms of getting those crisp outlet passes, because that's where they're dangerous. That's where you can put, you know, the Montreal Canadiens on their heels, is by coming through the neutral zone with speed. And they did not do that. You know, look, the only time that I can really think of them generating much speed through the neutral zone yesterday was Nikolaj Ehlers, and it led to the Shea Weber tripping penalty. So, yep. I mean, you can see cause and effect. Cause being, you know, great speed, effect, tripping penalty. That's what the Jets need to focus on. They need to be attacking in waves with speed, yes. Because once you slow down in the neutral zone, you're playing right into the Montreal Canadiens' hands, because you don't have another real option. You don't have an alternative to really generate offense if it's not through speed through the neutral zone. And that's what we've learned about this Jets team over the last number of years. That's how they succeed. They succeed off the rush. But when you succeed off the rush, and when you have to win off the rush, that means you have to start by getting crisp passes and getting that speed from your own blue line into the opponent's zone.
Yeah, and I want to get Dave M in here, but that would be, for me, to further your point, Drew, that would be a reason to bring in Ville Heinola, right? And I don't want to get anybody's hopes up that, you know, Heinola is going to come in for game three or any in this series, but that would be the simple argument for getting Heinola into the lineup, because all due respect to a guy like Jordy Benn's, you know, get the puck, make the pass quick, like get it out. Like Jordy Benn's not a guy that's going to generate speed in his own zone and in the neutral zone. Heinola is a guy that can move the puck. Like, he is the prototypical puck moving defenseman. Dave M will tell you better than me about how he can move that puck based on what he was doing with the Moose. So that would be the main argument for me. But, you know, Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, you know, even Tucker Poolman. I mean, these guys can move the puck, but it's going to, you know, take a five-man effort here. And I think the Jets have just looked too slow. Like, it seems like we're kind of, you know, dummying down, but like they really have looked like a slow team. And I don't buy that they're a slow team. So, you know, they're going to have to come out there in game three and they're
a slow player is Eric Staal when he was trying to get in on that breakaway late in the game yesterday. You could see that he's a guy who doesn't have the speed necessary. The Jets aren't slow. You know, Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis aren't the fastest guys anymore, but they're certainly on the back end of their career. But the Jets' top nine, when the passes are crisp and when the execution is right and when it starts from their own zone going towards the Hab zone, they can be a fast team, and that's how they have to execute, and they just haven't done it so far this series. Are they able to flip that switch? Are they able to start doing it? Well, the rest of their season certainly depends on it, Dave.
Yeah, and we'll see. I mean, look, we've talked about it consistently. They've been a much better road team than they have a home team this season. So we'll see if they can, you know, create some of that road magic. They were able to start well in the Edmonton series, obviously on the road. And they're going to have to. I mean, there's no more. You want to talk about cliches. There's no more time to talk about cliches. And it doesn't get any more important than tomorrow night. And we're going to see the Jets are practicing at 11 o'clock today in Winnipeg. Then they're going to fly to Montreal. So stay tuned to AllegalCurve.com to watch we'll still be on the air, but we'll stay tuned and we'll have the playoff practice report, which you can see all the media availability and you can see all the updates from the skate. But we'll see. Is Paul Stastny going to be ready to return? I mean, that's a big question mark for this Winnipeg Jets team. We know Dylan DeMello is not an option. He's got a soft tissue injury, according to Paul Maurice. And let's be realistic, guys. I was thinking about this. When Paul Maurice is telling you that the nature of someone's injury,
that means he's out for a while.
That means he's probably out. When Paul Maurice says he's more than day-to-day, says it's going to be at least a week, and it's soft tissue injury, when he's specific like that in the playoffs, like, to me, that means Dylan DeMello is not coming back. I mean, I could be wrong, but it's very unusual for Paul Maurice to be being
He's more forthcoming in the playoffs than he is in the regular season.
Well, he's not. He's not because, I mean, let's think about this. He hasn't talked about Paul Stastny in any way, shape, or form.
Well, he's more forthcoming about Dylan DeMello than we've seen during the regular season a lot of times.
I don't even think we know if Stastny's upper body or lower body, do we?
No, we don't know anything about Stastny. Nobody knows anything about Stastny. But so that's my point. My point is when he's being forthcoming in that regard, it's a sign of something. And so So, I mean, like, you're not getting the point of that kind of long statement was that you're not getting Dylan DeMello back. So that's not a reality for this Jets team, despite the fact that he and Josh Morrissey have played so well together. You know, that to me is one of the toughest breaks. And again, this is more about the Jets being able to generate. Dylan DeMello is not that guy. You're not looking for offense from Dylan DeMello. That's not what he does. That's not his bag. But there's no question about it that, you know, this team, to the point that we've made consistently through the first half an hour of the show, is that they're not generating, they're not crisp, they're not on the same page, which is unusual because, and you really do wonder, right, that whole rest versus rust, and people are going to say, oh, that's an excuse. Well, guys, I mean, this doesn't look like the same team, and Montreal is different, right? As he talked about it on last night's show, Montreal played their four lines across the board almost evenly, and Edmonton doesn't do that. Edmonton runs Draisaitl and McDavid for, you know, 80% of the game, and the other guys get the remaining, well, Drew, according to the math I used earlier, like 45% of the game. So it wouldn't be a function of that in this series. But like I said, it to me, it's all about in-game adjustment and adjustment throughout the course of a series. And if you're unable to do so, well, that falls on it falls on the coaching staff for not drawing up a good game plan, and it falls on the players for not executing.
Let's take our first commercial break. When we come back, more Jets and Habs talk. Our buddy Scott Bilk is going to join us. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers, too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew. Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly. See LindenMarketDental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave Minuk not able to get back in time. You know, he just had to go talk to Ezzy that desperately. He slides into the screen, but not under the wire like he usually does. That's okay, Dave. We'll find you later.
Drew.
What's that, Ezzy?
We have to do a secret handshake.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you guys do during the break, but that's between you guys, and that's not
what's up, Scotty.
I was enjoying Dave come flying into the screen. That's all.
There you go. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself, don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As you all can see, we have our first guest of the show. He's a good friend of ours. He's a man that I'm pleased to call a friend, a great reporter, and a quality, top-notch human being. Our buddy Scott Billick joins us in the bottom left of the corner. Scotty, nice to see you, buddy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing fine and dandy, obviously. You know, the day after, the night before, talking about the Jets and the Habs, and I believe you were the one who tweeted after game one, or you asked Paul Maurice after game one about if the Jets needed more playoff edge to their hockey after what you described game one as more of a regular season feel. I think I followed up on that a little bit by tweeting that last night's game had more of an exhibition feel than it did anything playoff hockey related.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? I mean, I thought about what Blake Wheeler said after last night's game, and pretty much all the players saying they kind of took a step forward. And, you know, you kind of question that when you don't score a goal in a playoff game. And I looked at it as, like, I get what they're saying. They got back to, or got sort of back to, a certain defensive style of the game. They didn't allow any even strength goals. You know, they basically, the only goal that was scored last night was on a pretty brutal play by Kyle Connor, a flyby where he should have at least taken out Tyler Toffoli some way. Well, you know, the thing is, like, you got to get a stick. You have to do something because Josh Morrissey on that goal is set. He's ready to block the shot, and Toffoli's not going to toe drag around and make that move because Morrissey already has it. But because Kyle Connor comes in and does it, Toffoli makes his move, rips his shot past Connor Hellebuyck. It's an ugly goal. Like, that's not what you want to see in the playoffs. I do feel like the Jets played, looking back, they played a little bit better than they did in game one in terms of the defensive game. But the problem is the lapses that happened led to Connor Hellebuyck having to be unbelievable again, right? And you won't look at that game and say, oh, he made, you know, these massive saves. I mean, Carey Price probably made a nicer save. And the nicest save of the game probably came from Neil Pionk, if we're being honest. but, you know, I think that part of the issue is the two-on-ones that are still being generated by the other teams. And then, like, the one thing that I look to, and just the kind of the lapse of where, like, the playoff judgment, where you are. Second period's coming to a close. There's about 10 seconds left. And Eric Staal beats Josh Morrissey on a breakaway. I mean, that's like, okay, so what's going on here? Like, I mean, I get it, but you have to get to the point where those things aren't happening in a playoff game. And the Jets did a good job of that against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in round one. It's now time to, you know, figure that out now, because the difference between going out down, or, you know, scratching and clawing back to 2-1 on Sunday and going down 3-0 is essentially life or death for the Jets playoffs. Only four teams have ever come back, I believe. I think it's still four. Come back from 3-0 down. It's essentially an impossible task. The last team to do it was the Flyers against the Boston Bruins in 2010. Blake Wheeler knows that all too well, because he was on that Boston Bruins team that lost four straight after going up 3-0. Obviously, there's always the possibility that it can happen. But what we've seen from the Jets over the first two games is just not enough to warrant the fact that they could do that. Connor Hellebuyck was sensational last night, but you have to give a goalie at least a run, if not two or three, in a game, and they didn't do that last night. That last night was a type of game where you could have given Connor Hellebuyck one goal, and he was shutting down the door just the same way that Carey Price was. You know, I think Carey Price gets talked about more after that game because obviously they win. Connor Hellebuyck had a good game and really kept the Jets in, especially when they were kind of changing their risk profile in the third to try and generate a goal at the other end. You know, Connor Hellebuyck shut the door on a couple of Nick Suzuki. There was a couple of Kotkaniemi had a couple of chances in that. So, I think, you know, you can't say it was a good game when you don't score a goal. I get why they're kind of, you know, doing that whole message of, you know, we improved. And if you look at 5-on-5, they did, you know, in that sense. But, you know, they need some guys to step up. And I'm sure we'll get to, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois or whatever. But they need somebody to step up and really kind of take this series and make a big change. Because, again, like I said, I think, and we can talk about this too, but I think the Jets have a good chance of evening up the series on a back-to-back on Monday night if they can get that win in Game 3, just because of how the Montreal Canadiens have played their schedule. You know, they played a seven-game series. Now they're playing four games in six nights. That's taxing, you know, schedule. But the Jets have to make it taxing on the Canadiens, and I don't think they've really done that in the first two games.
And the Canadiens had the back-to-back in that seven-game series, right? They lost both games, both of those back-to-back games against the Leafs, Scotty. So I agree with you 100%. And, a big storyline is obviously going to be, you know, are the Jets able to create offense Sunday night in Game 3? But I wanted to ask you about Paul Stastny, because we talked about it on the post-game show. You were on with the boys, Kenny and Rennie. I'm sure you guys talked about it as well. If you kind of read more into what Paul Maurice was saying, I think you would agree there's a pretty good chance that Stastny is going to play Game 3 on Sunday night. So my question for you is, and, you know, this is getting a little bit into the line combination game, but does it make the most sense to you to keep Stastny up the middle and then, you know, maybe you reunite Dubois with Ehlers and then maybe Stastny centers Wheeler and Connor? Like, how if Stastny is able to go in Game 3, and it sounds like, as we said, you know, there's a good chance he is going to be ready. How do you see Maurice deploying him?
Yeah, I mean, first I would caution anybody about Paul Stastny, because we just don't know in terms of playoffs. I mean, there was a time in here where Tyler Myers was day-to-day for about 5 months. and that wasn't even in the playoffs.
I remember that.
I mean, obviously different situation, but you know, every injury is a mystery in the playoffs, right? In terms of, you know, what it is and often what it is, unless you can't decipher it from the ice, and then how long a guy is going to be out. But, you know, to get your point, yeah, I think Paul said they need him down the middle, right? Like, no offense to Andrew Copp yesterday, but that line just didn't get it done. And Pierre Lacroix struggled. I mean, you know, my issue, and Pierre Lacroix may be dealing with something himself. He obviously didn't play, every game in the first round too. He was injured as well, and came back. I wonder if he's still kind of dealing with the effects of that. Because it's all speculation, this, but you don't see that kind of power forward game from Pierre-Luc Dubois at the moment. There was many times last night where he's trying to turn the corner on the guy, and it's just not happening. He's getting separated from the puck. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, when he came here, a lot of the criticism, you know, that's come now, you know, wasn't very valid early on, because he was a guy that was winning a lot of board battles. He was strong and that sort of thing. It hasn't been the case so far in these first couple of games. But I think Paul Stastny just brings, first of all, he brings experience, that calming presence, you know, those little intangible things. But I think what he does is, like, he really affects your lines in such a different way. Like, I mean, you had to realize that last night, without Stastny, without Mark Scheifele, the Jets had new line combos up and down the roster, right? Mm-hmm. I think they need Paul Stastny back, first of all. It's obviously a huge thing to have him just back in the lineup. I think it affects, you know, could he play the top line? Possibly. I'm interested to see what Paul Maurice does in terms of, you know, not a lot of chemistry between the lines getting put together as they were. Paul Stastny can play with Blake Wheeler. We've seen that. He can play with Nikolaj Ehlers, and I think that might be more enticing for Paul Maurice to kind of – we know that line can produce, and that line's good, and that Stastny works with Ehlers really well. I thought that Ehlers played a good game last night, but I didn't think there was a lot of support for him on his line. And you know, again, this isn't anything negative against Andrew Kopp. It's just he's a different – it's just he hasn't, you know, kind of developed that kind of chemistry with an Andrew Kopp, because, you know, at center, because Andrew Kopp hasn't played a lot of center with this team. And so
don't you think, I'm just going to say, Scotty, quickly, don't you think there's a good chance that Maurice is going to reunite Kopp, Lowry and Appleton? Because we were talking about it on the post game show. And again, I'm not sure if you guys touched on it, you and Weber and Sean, but like, it seems like Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton is such a dependable line, good advanced stats, everything like that. Like, it seems like that's something that, you know, Maurice has in his back pocket that he can use for game three.
Yeah, and I think you could be right. I mean, again, this all hinges on Stastny playing. So, yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing. You could also have Kopp on the wing on that second line with Ehlers too. Like, that's the thing. Like, I don't know. Because are you going to play Christian Vesalainen with Stastny and Ehlers? Does Vesalainen even stay in the lineup? I mean, we don't really know those things. I think Jansen Harkins probably comes out. I think then you could move Perreault back down to the fourth line. You know, the problem that I'm seeing here is that, you know, Montreal's fourth line outplayed Winnipeg's fourth line last night, and they have in this series so far. But part of the issue with that is, okay, so if the Jets' fourth line can't play well against that fourth line, how do you get away from it? Where do you deploy your fourth line? And I think last night, it obviously, you know, Matthew Perreault, people will say he didn't have a great game last night. I thought he was creating a lot of chaos in the game. The penalty, Corey Perry sold that one.
Brutal penalty.
That, you know, that penalty call was terrible.
You know,
at the very least, Scotty, Perry should have gotten an embellishment penalty.
I agree because this is what Corey Perry does. And give Corey Perry credit. He's a wily veteran who has been very effective in these playoffs. He's been effective against the Jets this season. This is what Corey Perry does, to be fair, I mean, there's been times where Nikolaj Ehlers has sold the call and that sort of thing, right? Like, this happens all the time. Yeah. Guys try and get calls, especially in the playoffs, you're trying, because special teams can be such a huge important factor. So, yeah, I think, you know, going back to your question, I think, you know, Kopp, Lowry, Appleton is a very good line. You want them playing. You want them, you know, churning out offensive zone time. Like, that's what, you know, that's what they're good. I thought they were very good in the first round, especially, you know, trying to defend McDavid and Draisaitl, depending on what the matchup was that night. So, I think Paul Stastny fixes a couple of the problems up front, because you don't have to have all these, like, new line combinations and all that stuff. I think you can get back to at least some semblance of normalcy.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. You know Scott from his great work, of course, with the Winnipeg Sun, the Jets, and the Habs. Game 3 goes late tomorrow afternoon. The Illegal Curve post-game show follows that. And then following the Illegal Curve post-game show is the post-post-game show with Kenny and Rennie and Scott Billick as well, also available on the YouTube.
You know, Scott, the when you were talking about Tyler Myers and the, you know, 5 months of day-to-day, and that's why I thought it was so curious that Paul Maurice said Dylan DeMello had a, you know, when he was very specific, saying it was a soft tissue injury, and he said it would be longer than day-to-day, you know, and it, about a week. And to me, that was like, well, that seemed to be a bit of a tell. So yeah. given that you know that he's not available for games 3 and 4, we saw in the third period Paul Maurice put Neil Pionk with Josh Morrissey. Do you think moving forward – that's what he's going to go to, or do you think he'll return to the more familiar Pullman, Morrissey, Pionk and Forbert?
Right, Forbert. Yeah. You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I'd be all for game 3, putting Ville Heinola in the lineup and seeing what happens. And here's the reason why. If you look at the Jets defense last night, they may have played a decent game in terms of, you know, 5-on-5 and all that, but in trying to get out of their own zone, you know, here's the thing. So I was watching Montreal quite a bit because of just the way that, you know, the configuration of the rink, where we sit in the press box. You see how good Carey Price was. And I don't worry, I'm not talking about Carey Price too much. But you see how good he is at distributing the puck to his defenseman, right? And so it helps so well with them breaking out. So you see these really snap Sherratt to, you know, to a winger, Gallagher, whoever, out of the zone. Shea Weber to a winger out of the zone. You know, the Jets didn't have a lot of that. A lot of it was, you know, just trying to give it to maybe Ehlers or somebody trying to skate it out. I thought Logan Stanley was pretty good at, you know, getting pucks out of the zone, just making that first outlet pass. But the Jets need a puck moving defenseman back there right now, and they don't have one. And, you know, they have Logan Stanley, but I'm not sure how much they trust using him enough that he's as effective at doing that for the entirety of a game. And so I think, you know, you can't, I don't know how you kind of go. So you put Tucker Pullman back with Josh Morrissey. And then by the end of the game, you have Pionk with Morrissey because it's just not working there. You obviously need to find a goal, but, you know, and Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey can find offense, but they're not as offensively inclined at this point because of what they have to do at the other zone, the other end. I like the idea of putting Ville Heinola into this game, pairing him with Josh Morrissey, taking Jordy Benn out of the lineup. Excuse me, I didn't think that Jordy Benn had a great game last night. You know, fair to him, he hasn't played in a while. You know, so that's always going to be tough. And Ville Heinola would, you know, have the same thing. I think the motivation's different for Ville Heinola. I'm not saying that Jordy Benn didn't have the motivation to come in and do something, but I just think that, you know, here's your opportunity. You still have one game in hand when it comes to him and his entry-level slide and all that. So put him in and see what he does. One of the best games that Josh Morrissey played this season was with Ville Heinola against Toronto. And you know, I think you saw last night Josh Morrissey wasn't playing the same way that he did in the first round when he was with Dylan DeMello, because it doesn't work with him and Tucker Pullman. It's a different game. I think Josh Morrissey feels like he has to be a little more defensive. I don't think there's just cohesion between him and Pullman in terms of a pairing. Not nearly the same cohesion you saw with him and DeMello. Mm-hmm. Give Ville Heinola a shot. I mean, that, you know, at this point you're at a crossroads here. You have to win game 3. It's a must win, you know, because the reason is very few teams have ever come back. I already said that. And so it's a must win. You can't go down 3-0 to a team in the playoffs and expect to come back. You can win a game and get to 2-1, and then, you know, it's a new series at that point. You breathe life into a team. I do think that, you know, you can play then Forbert and Pionk together. You can keep that there, and then you can keep Stanley and Pullman. And I thought Stanley and Pullman were a pretty good effective pairing in the first round, because Tucker Pullman playing less minutes in a reduced role is kind of where he needs to be, and he excels in that. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're trying to do make the least amount of changes. But Paul Maurice has often said, when a guy comes in, he wants to make the least number of changes. I think you can do that by bringing Ville Heinola in. Hard for me to say. And put him and pair him with Josh Morrissey and then see where it goes. I don't like, I mean, yes, there's obviously risk in that, but the Jets need to take a risk at this point because of where they are in this series. I don't think you can look at game two and be like, oh yeah, we're just going to go back with that. And I'll look at, you know, some of the comments too. I agree that defense wasn't maybe the big issue last night. I think the problem was the defense just isn't generating anything right now. And because of the fact that your offense also isn't generating, you probably need to try and find something. I'm not saying Ville Heinola is coming in and scoring a hat trick, but I think what he does is provide that puck moving presence that you don't really have at the moment. And I think you also,
I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I think you help Josh Morrissey too. I think Josh Morrissey plays a better game with Ville Heinola by his side than he has with Tucker Poolman. And right now you don't have Dylan DeMello. So I think you just have to try and make a change and kind of see if it works. The thing too, you put Ville Heinola in, it doesn't work, you can then make the change. You can put him down with Stanley, or you can move Pionk up and have Forbert with Heinola, whatever, right? But at the same time, if you don't try and do something new, I don't know how you start tiring out, you know, putting pressure on guys like Sherratt and Weber, trying to tire out this Canadiens team who should be, you know, relatively fatigued after a 7-game series. I just don't think the Jets have done enough to actually kind of force that issue. So I think what you need to do is try and force it. And by doing that, you need to start, it starts in the defensive zone, trying to make those outlet paths, stretch the game, you know, try and get quickly through the neutral zone, because, you know, what we've seen from, it's like a pseudo trap game that they're that Montreal is playing, right? It's it's effective, boring, sure. It's effective. I mean, the New Jersey Devils in 95 won a Stanley Cup doing this.
I was about to say, is Jacques Lemaire coaching the Habs now?
Well, yeah, it's a different time, right? Right. But at the same time, it's been effective against the Jets and no more than last night. So you got to find your ways around that. And I think the best way to do that is by having a puck moving defenseman that can kind of see in a certain way, have the vision that Ville Heinola has. I know, you know, people are going to talk, and it's like, you know, this is the, you know, is he really going to make an impact? I do think he can make an impact in a game like this. So we'll see what happens.
To your point, Scott, I mean, you know, the Jets are built on generating speed. They're built on speed coming out of their zone. They're built on speed out of their neutral zone. And when you can't make a good first pass, when you can't exit your zone with speed, you're not going to then generate that speed through the neutral zone the way Montreal is playing, because they're just standing five guys up there, or they're doing the 1-3-1, and they're saying, okay, you try skating through, you know, five of us, you're not going to be successful. That's why that first pass is so important, and that's what, you know, Dylan DeMello does so well. You know, we know that he's not going to be an option, but he would, you know, that's why I think Morrissey also looked better, is because they were able to generate that speed, able to generate that first pass. So maybe Heinola, who, you know, has got more of an offensive bent to his game, maybe he can generate that first pass. And then maybe that gets Connor going with speed, because, you know, it's from my perspective, you know, late in the game yesterday, until late in the game when the Jets were desperate, you know, Dubois didn't have a shot and Connor didn't have a shot. And these are guys who are playing your top line minutes last night. That, to me, is inexcusable. It's on them to a large degree, but it's also on the fact that the Jets couldn't generate any speed to put them into a position to generate those shots.
Yeah. How many times did you see the Jets, you know, come through the neutral zone, hit center ice and just pound the puck in, you know, from there? And I get it. Like, you know, dump and chase is something that people have been taught often, right? You don't have an option. Get pucks deep, go and win a board battle. You can't do that as much, because in this NHL, I mean, you need to gain the zone with possession, you know, especially if you're not going to win a lot of those board battles. And last night, I mean, this is what Montreal wanted the Jets to do. They wanted them to pound the puck in from there. Then Montreal's big dudes on defense would go win a board battle. They would make the outlet pass, and then the transition is the other way. It's... You know, I can imagine
it's frustrating to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I was just going to say. Like, I mean, how frustrating is it for the Jets to come through the neutral zone, even get it out of their zone, and then the only option that they really have is to rim it around the boards, and then hopefully that you can get it. And it's just like that's. And the other thing that does it, it stifles the ability for Nikolaj Ehlers and Kyle Connor to kind of use their straight line speed and kind of make a play, right? And draw a couple defensemen to them so you can open up one of your wingers. And that it's the other thing with the lines, I just didn't feel like there was enough chemistry, just to go back to that one part about the lines. I didn't think there was enough chemistry in utilizing the speed of Ehlers or Connor, because I didn't think that Pierre-Luc Dubois was playing at that type of speed, or that Andrew Kopp was playing at that type of speed. So it's I think again Paul Stastny fixes several of those things, but at the same time it you can't necessarily expect Paul Stastny to be in the lineup. I mean, yes, Paul Maurice hinted at that he could be a thing, but we don't know. I mean, Paul Stastny took the morning skate yesterday. Usually when a guy takes a morning skate, he's probably going to play. It was a game time decision. Obviously, he tried and couldn't go. So you have to come to the point where you may not have Stastny. So how are you going to beat the Montreal Canadiens with what you have? And then if Stastny comes in, you kind of go back to old faithful in a lot of ways and go from there. So yeah, it's an interesting situation. And I think that Paul Maurice has a lot on his hands here to try and figure out how to get the pairings or the lines right and who to play on defense at this point to try and, get through that neutral zone and get through the trap and try and find some offense.
Scott Billick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. The Jets into Montreal for game 3 Sunday late afternoon. Game 4 goes Monday night. We'll have the Illegal Curve post-game show for you after both games. The Jets will either have their season end, or it'll be tied at 2-2, or they'll be down 3-1. Those are the only three options that are left for the Jets and the Habs with games 3 and 4 Sunday and Monday night. Scott, always appreciate your time. Always appreciate your insight. We'll let you get on with your Saturday morning. The Jets skating in about an hour's time at the arena. We'll see if it's an optional. We'll see who's on the ice. We'll see if we can glean any insights into any potential roster changes for the Winnipeg Jets. Always appreciate
thanks
it,
for,
buddy.
Thanks for all of your COVID coverage, Scotty, because I know that, it's we're about a year and a half into this, but you've done an incredible job. And
amazing, obviously
we're towards the end of this, but, You're my go-to source. Oh yeah, appreciate it. And no, I think we appreciate it, guys. You're doing an awesome job.
For the record, Scott,
I don't understand sometimes how you cover both press conferences. Well, like I see Dr. Atwal tweets, and then I see Paul Maurice tweets. But that's just because you're such a good journalist.
I just step back from that a bit. It's been a little bit of it just becomes a bit too much at times.
Scott, though, you do deserve a lot of credit for what you've done. I mean, I've said this to you privately, but I'll say it publicly as well. I've said it publicly on Twitter, but the job you've done is simply remarkable. I mean, I can't tell you how many of my friends. No, it's true. I'm not trying to just blow smoke. I'm telling you, like I find what you do to be such a valuable resource for people in Manitoba. I get so much information from your tweets. Sometimes I'll text you privately, being like, "What the heck is going on?" But honestly, like so many people I know will tell me, "Oh, I saw what Scott Billick said because I've referenced you to be a good source for information on people in our province."
And then you have to let him know, like, Scotty is our boy. We've been friends with Scott, like, since he was in CRECOM, and so
a long time ago now. Yeah.
Anyway, so the long story short is, Scott, you've done a remarkable job. It isn't easy what you do, but you've done a great job informing your fellow Manitobans, and you do deserve to be commended for what you've done.
Yeah, and I appreciate it, and I thank you for having me on these shows because it keeps me sane. I get to talk about hockey. And I'd rather talk about hockey than COVID. So,
Scotty, I was going to ask you, have you ever by accident asked Dr. Rusin or Dr. Atwal like a hockey
about this
question?
Lineup changes?
Yeah, like have you ever by accident asked, like, Dr. Rusin, is Stastny playing for the Jets tonight?
No, sometimes you want to because the question you're going to ask isn't going to get the answer you want. So maybe just like have fun with it. But obviously those are, important press conferences. I've talked to Dr. Rusin, actually. He's a Habs fan. But I've talked to him privately about hockey a little bit in a couple of interviews that I've done with him. It's different worlds, and it's interesting sometimes, even during this, that they've kind of crossed roads because of how, even this past week with healthcare workers being allowed into the game and all that stuff, which again, you know, just if I know I'm going a little bit long here, but you know, just to
go long.
We had nothing, better to talk about, I assure you.
Yeah, keep going, man.
I think, and obviously, you know, people in the chat weren't in at the game last night. Dave was, in the last couple of games, you know, and it provides hope, right? And I know it's like, you should you let the healthcare workers in? Shouldn't you? Blah blah blah. That's another debate. But I think the big thing was to see these people, and you can't really see them smiling, but you know they are, because you know they're wearing masks and all that. But I mean, you know, they're sitting there, they're dancing, they're, you know, there's just there was relief on the face of some of these people, and just, you know, joy, I guess, right? You know, you can't always see it with the mask, but you know it's there. And yeah, I think it was just, it was nice to see fans in the building. I tuned into the Vegas Colorado game, you know, after that, when I was walking out with Kenny and Sean last night from the game, and you see, I mean, those buildings are packed, and it's like, man, like
17,000 last night.
I know, like, how much do we all miss that, right? Like, I mean, how much do you, because it's just the atmosphere. Like, we were in the building in 2014. We were in the building during the 2017-18 run where it was just incredibly loud. You know, those are the things that you kind of miss, and part of it is just the people, right? I mean, it's just, there's joy there, right? There's hope. And I think, you know, you see a little bit of that with some of these, you know, it's only 500 people in a 15,000 person rink. It's not a big rink to begin with by NHL standards, but just to see some people in there, you know, kind of doing their thing, raising their towels, whatever. It's just nice to see, you know, some healthcare workers getting, first of all, recognized for the life-saving work they've done over the last 15 months. Like, let's not, I mean, they're the real heroes here. You know, they've saved lives. That's their job, right? And to see them get some, you know, it's a tiny token of what they've done over the last 15, just to see some fans in the building. Yeah. It was a bit emotional in game one. And, you know, I think last night it was just happy to kind of see people again. Right. I mean, I think that's the hardest part of this whole thing is, you don't get to see a lot of people, and just because the orders and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was nice to see people in the rink. It was nice to see people walking through the security gates and all that stuff again. It just varies, you know, things that, you know, we never even thought about. You took it for granted, right? People just walking through security to get into the game, and now it's like 15 months later, and yeah, you're seeing it again. It's like, it's such a, you know, a foreign kind of thing to see it. It's so weird. And so, yeah, anyways, kind of a ranting there, but I'm just glad that people are starting to get in, and that, you know, things are, there is, you know, a glimmer of hope right now.
Scotty, one of those fans was my sister-in-law, Leah. So I have to give her a shout out. She's an ICU nurse. So shout out to Leah. Sure. She was at game one.
Yeah. Anybody that came through there everybody's deserving, right? I mean, you would wish that all the healthcare workers could go, because, and the reality is they can't, because of, you know, we're in a bit of a dire situation right now in hospitals and that sort of thing. And, you know, people have to work, and they're working double shifts, and talk to a lot of nurses, a lot of doctors throughout this. And you know, it's rough, man. It's rough to hear some of the stuff that they've gone through. They've gone through a lot. I mean, I know you guys are giving me credit for my coverage and all that. And yeah, I appreciate that. And I hope people can understand the work that healthcare workers have done through this, because having talked to a lot of them, they've gone through hell and back. And for a lot of them right now in this third wave, they're still in that hell, you know, trying to, you know, get through it again. And so, yeah, anyways, I hope that's just kind of the message I wanted. I think it's, there's a bit of hope there to see people in the stands, and I hope people can latch on to that hope. So, yeah.
Beer beauty, Scotty. Beer's on us. Next time we can get together, hopefully it'll be this summer. We'll
fireball. Tip more than fireball. Scotty wants fireball.
Scotty wants fireball. We can do fireball as well.
I'm a bit of a tequila guy, so yeah, but it gets bad then.
We'll keep the Don Julio on ice,
Scotty. We'll get you the most expensive bottle of what's the cheap stuff? What's the cheap tequila, Drew?
Mezcal?
No, it's Don. I can't even think of it right now.
I haven't drank tequila since some bad nights at the Tijuana Yacht Club back in back in the day, and we don't need to revisit those. You could tell how this is a hockey show, and I think there's photos probably somewhere about that, and absolutely nobody wants to see those photos. Let me tell you.
All right, let's move along, boys.
Scotty,
Jose Cuervo, Scotty. I'll keep the Jose Cuervo on ice.
You got the Patron out. That's what you want. I want Patron. Anyways, all right. Have a good one, guys. I appreciate it.
There you go. Scotty Billick, our good buddy. Still to come on the show, we're going to be joined by Chris Johnston of Sportsnet. Mark Dumont from Montreal is going to give him the Montreal perspective. Lots of stuff yet to come. Stay with us. We're going to take another commercial break. Much more to come. We'll talk about the Scheifele suspension as well. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.